what happens when a confessor bears a male child. She cleared her throat again, swallowing back her sobs. When a boy is born to a confessor, he is brought to a special place in the center of Aedendrill, where his mother places him on the stone. She shifted her weight. She was clearly having difficulty telling him about this. He took her soft hand in both of his and rubbed the back of it with his thumbs, even though he felt for the first time that he had no business touching her in a familiar manner. As I told you, a man touched by a confessor will do whatever she tells him. He could feel her hand trembling. The mother commands her husband in what he is to do. And he places a rod over the baby's throat, and he steps on both ends. Richard released her hand. Running the fingers of both hands through his hair, he turned to the fire. Every boy child? Yes, she admitted in a voice he could hardly hear. No chance can be taken that any male confessor lives, because he might be one who could not handle the power and would use it to gain dominance for himself. Bring back the dark times. The wizards and the other confessors watch carefully any confessor who is with child and do everything they can to comfort her if it is a boy, and therefore must be. Her voice trailed off. Richard suddenly realized that he hated the Midlands, hated it with a vengeance second only to what he felt toward Dark and Raw. For the first time, he understood why those in Westland had wanted a place to live without magic. He wished he could be back there, away from any magic. Tears came to his eyes when he thought of how much he missed the Heartland woods. He vowed to himself that if he stopped Rawl, he would see to it that the boundary was put back up. Zed would help with that, there was no doubt. Richard understood now why Zed, too, had wanted to be away from the Midlands. And when the boundary went back up, Richard would be on the other side, for as long as he lived. But first, there would be the matter of the sword. He would not give back the Sword of Truth. He would destroy it. Thank you, Caelan, he forced himself to say, for telling me. I wouldn't have wanted to hear this from another. He felt his world withering to nothing. He had always seen stopping Rawl as the beginning of his life, a point from where he went forward and anything was possible. Now, stopping Rawl was an end. Not only of Rawl, but of him too. There was nothing beyond that. Everything beyond was dead. When he stopped Rawl and Caelan was safe, he would go back to the Heartland Woods alone and his life would be over. He could hear her crying behind him. Richard, if you want me to leave, please do not be afraid to tell me so. I will understand. It is something a confessor is used to. He looked down at the dying fire for a moment, and then closed his eyes tight, forcing back the lump in his throat, the tears. Pain seared through his chest as it sank with his labored breathing. Please, Caelan, is there any way, he asked, any way at all? We could... for us... No, she moaned. He rubbed his shaking hands together. Everything was lost to him. Caelan, he managed at last. Is there any law or rule or something that says we can't be friends? She answered in a whining cry. Oh. He turned numbly to her and put his arms around her. I could really use a friend right now, he whispered. Me too, she cried against his chest as she hugged him back. But I can be no more. I know, he said as tears ran down his cheeks. But Caelan, I love... She put her fingers to his lips to silence him. Don't say that, she cried. Please, Richard, don't ever say that. She could stop him from saying it out loud, but not in his mind. She clung to him, sobbing, and he remembered when they had been in the wayward pine after they had first met, and the underworld had almost reclaimed her. She had clung to him, and he had thought at the time that she was not used to having anyone hold her. Now he knew why. He laid his cheek against the top of her head. A small flame of his anger flickered in the ashes of his dreams. "Have you picked your mate yet?" She shook her head. "There are more important things to worry about right now. But if we win, and I live, then I must. Make one promise for me, if I can." His throat felt so hot he had to swallow twice to talk. "Promise me you won't pick him until I'm back in Westland. I don't want to know who it is." She sobbed for a moment before she answered, her fingers clutching tighter at his shirt. "Promise." After a time of standing, holding her, trying to get control of himself, fighting back the blackness, he forced a smile. "You're wrong about one thing." "And what would that be?" "You said no man can command a confessor. You are wrong. I command the Mother Confessor herself. You are sworn to protect me. I hold you to your duty as my guide." She laughed a painful little laugh against his chest. "It would appear you are right. Congratulations. You are the first man ever to have done so. And what does my master command of his guide?" "That she doesn't give me any more trouble about ending her life. I need her. And that she gets us to the Queen and the box before Rawl, and then sees us safely away." Kaelin nodded her head against his chest. "By your command, my lord." She separated from him, put her hands on his upper arms, and gave them a squeeze as she smiled through her tears. "How is it that you can always make me feel better, even at the worst times of my life?" He shrugged, forced himself to smile for her, even though he was dying inside. "I am the Seeker. I can do anything." He wanted to say more, but his voice failed him. Her smile widened as she shook her head. "You are a very rare person, Richard Cipher," she whispered. He only wished he were alone so he could cry. Chapter 35. With his boot, Richard pushed little piles of dirt over the dying embers of the fire, snuffing out the only heat in the dawn of the cold new day. The sky was brightening into an icy blue, and a sharp wind blew from the west. Well, at least the wind would be at their backs, he thought. Near his other boot lay the roasting stick that Kaelin had used to cook the rabbit she had caught herself, with a snare he had taught her to make. He felt his face flush with the thought of that, the thought of him, a woods guide, teaching her things like that. The Mother Confessor, more than a queen. Queens bow to the Mother Confessor, she had said. He felt as foolish as he had ever felt in his life. Mother Confessor. Who did he think he was? Zed had tried to warn him, if he had only listened. Emptiness threatened to consume him. He thought of his brother, his friends Zed and Chase. Though it didn't fill the void, at least he had them. Richard watched Kaelin shouldering her pack. She had no one, he thought. Her only friends, the other confessors, were dead. She was alone in the world, alone in the Midlands, surrounded by people she was trying to save who feared and hated her, and enemies who wanted to kill her, or worse, and not even her wizard to protect her. He understood why she had been afraid to tell him. He was her only friend. He felt even more foolish for thinking only of himself. If her friend was all he could be, then that's what he would be, even if it killed him. "It must have been hard to tell me," he said as he adjusted the sword at his hip. She pulled her cloak around her against the gusts of cold wind. Her face had resumed once more the calm expression that showed nothing, except that, as well as he knew her, he could now read the trace of pain in it. It would have been easier to have killed myself. He watched as she turned and started off, then followed after her. If she had told him in the beginning, he wondered, would he still be with her? If she had told him before he had come to know her, would he have been too afraid to be near her, same as everyone else? Maybe she had been right in being afraid to tell him sooner. But then, if she had, it might have spared him what he was feeling now. Near to midday, they came to a juncture of trails, marked with a stone half again as tall as he. Richard stopped, studying the symbols cut into the polished faces. What do they mean? They give direction to different towns and villages, and their distances, she said, warming her hands under her armpits. She inclined her head toward a trail. If we want to avoid people, this trail is best. How much farther? She looked at the stone again. I usually travel the roads between towns, not these less traveled trails. The stone does not give the distance by the trail, only by the roads, but I would guess a few more days. Richard drummed his fingers on the hilt of his sword. Are there any towns near? She nodded. We are an hour or two from Horner's Mill. Why? We could save ourselves time if we had horses. She looked up the trail toward the town, as if she could somehow see it. Horner's Mill is a lumber town, a sawmill. They would have a lot of horses, but it may not be a good idea. I have heard their sympathies lie with Dahara. Why don't we go have a look? If we had horses, it could save us a day at least. I have some silver and a piece or two of gold. Maybe we could buy some. I guess if we are careful, we could go have a look. But don't you dare pull out any of your silver or gold. It is Westland marked, and these people view anyone from across the western boundary as a threat. Stories and superstition. Well, how will we get horses, then? Steal them? She lifted an eyebrow. Have you forgotten so soon? You are with the Mother Confessor. I have but to ask. Richard covered his displeasure as best he could with a blank face. Let's go have a look. Horner's Mill sat hard on the edge of the Calisidrin River, drawing both power for the sawmills and transportation for the logs and lumber from the muddy brown water. Spillways snaked through the work areas, and ramshackle mill buildings loomed over the other structures. Stickered stacks of lumber lay row upon row under roofs of open buildings, and even more lay under tarps, waiting for either barges to take them by river or wagons to take them by road. Houses squatted close together on the hillside above the mill, looking as if they had started life as temporary shelter, and as the years had worn on, become unfortunately permanent. Even from a distance, Richard and Kaelin both knew that something was wrong. The mill was silent, the streets empty. The whole town should have been alive with activity. There should have been people at the shops, on the docks, at the mill, and in the streets, but there was no sign of beast or man. The town hunched in quiet, except for some tarps flapping in the wind and a few squeaking and banging tin panels on the mill buildings. When they got close enough, the wind brought something other than flapping tarps and banging tin. It brought the putrid smell of death. Richard checked that his sword was loose in its scabbard. Bodies, puffy and swollen, nearly ready to burst, stretched buttons and oozed fluid that attracted clouds of flies. The dead lay in corners and up against buildings like autumn leaves blown into piles. Most had ghastly wounds. Some were pierced through with broken lances. The silence seemed alive. Doors, smashed in and broken, hung at odd angles from a single hinge, or lay in the street with personal belongings and broken pieces of furniture. Windows in every building were shattered. Some of the buildings were nothing more than cold, charred piles of beams and rubble. Richard and Kaelin both held their cloaks across their noses and mouths, trying to shield themselves against the stench as their eyes were pulled to the dead. "Rahl?" he asked her. She studied different tumbled bodies from a distance. No, this is not the way Rahl kills. This was a battle. Looks more like a slaughter to me. She nodded her agreement. Remember the dead among the mud people? That is what it looks like when Rahl kills. It is always the same. This is different. They walked along through the town, staying close to the buildings, away from the center of the street, occasionally having to step over the gore. Every shop was looted, and what wasn't carried off was destroyed. From one shop, a bolt of pale blue cloth with evenly spaced dark stains had unwound itself across the road, as if it had been thrown out because its owner had ruined it in death. Kalin pulled his sleeve and pointed. On the wall of a building was written a message, in blood, "Death to all who resist the Westland." "What do you suppose that means?" she whispered, as if the dead might hear her. He stared at the dripping words. "I can't even imagine." He started off again, turning back twice to frown at the words on the wall. Richard's eye was caught by a cart sitting in front of a grain store. The cart was half loaded with small furniture and clothes, the wind whipping at the sleeves of little dresses. He exchanged a glance with Kalin. Someone was left alive, and it looked as if they were preparing to leave. He stepped carefully through the empty doorframe of the grain store, Kalin close at his back. Streamers of sunlight coming through the door and window sent shafts through the dust inside the building, falling on spilled sacks of grain and broken barrels. Richard stood just inside the doorway, to one side, with Kalin to the other, until his eyes adjusted to the dark. There were fresh footprints, mostly small ones, through the dust. His eyes followed them behind a counter. He gripped the hilt of his sword, but didn't draw it, and went to the counter. People cowered behind, trembling. "I'm not going to hurt you," he said in a gentle voice. "Come out."
"Are you a soldier with the People's Peace Army, here to help us?"
came a woman's voice from behind the counter. Richard and Kalin frowned at each other.
"No," she said, "we are just travelers passing through."
A woman with a dirty, tear-stained face and short, dark, matted hair pushed her head up. Her drab, brown dress was ragged and torn. Richard took his hand away from his sword so as not to frighten her. Her lip quivered, and her hollow eyes blinked at them in the dim light as she motioned others to come out. There were 6 children, 5 girls and 1 boy, another woman, and an old man. Once they were out, the children clinging woodenly to the 2 women, the 3 adults glanced at Richard, then stared openly at Kalin. Their eyes went wide, and they all shrank back as one against the wall. Richard frowned in confusion. Then he realized what they were staring at. Her hair. The 3 adults collapsed to their knees, heads bowed, each with their eyes to the floor. The children buried their faces silently in the women's skirts. With a sideways glance at Richard, Kalin quickly motioned with her hands for them to get up. They had their eyes fixed on the floor and couldn't see her frantic gesturing.
"Get up," she said. "There is no need for that. Get up."
Their heads came up. Confused, they looked at her hands, urging them to get to their feet. With great reluctance, they complied.
"By your command, Mother Confessor," one woman said in a shaking voice. "Forgive us, Mother Confessor, we did not recognize you by your clothes at first. Forgive us, we are only humble people. Forgive us for..."
Kalin gently cut her off.
"What is your name?"
The woman bowed deeply from the waist, remaining bent.
"I am Regina Clark, Mother Confessor."
Kalin grabbed her by her shoulders and straightened her.
"Regina, what has happened here?"
Regina's eyes filled with tears, and she cast a shrinking glance toward Richard as her lip trembled. Kalin looked back at him.
"Richard," she said softly, "why don't you take the old man and the children outside?"
He understood. The women were too afraid to talk in front of him. He gave a helping arm to the stooped old man and herded 4 of the children out. 2 of the youngest girls refused to leave the women's skirts, but Kalin nodded to him that it was all right. The 4 children clung together in a clump as they sat on the step outside, eyes empty and distant. None would answer when he asked their names or even look at him except with frightened peeks to make sure he didn't come any closer.
The old man only stared blankly ahead when Richard asked his name. "Can you tell me what happened here?" Richard asked him. His eyes widened as he looked out over the street.
"Westlanders."
Tears welled up, and he wouldn't say anything else. Fearing to get any more forceful, he decided to let the old man be. Richard offered him a piece of dried meat from his pack, but he ignored it. The children shrank back from his hand as he held it out with the same offer. He put the meat back in his pack. The oldest girl, just nearing womanhood, looked at him as if he might slay them or eat them on the spot. He had never seen anyone so terrified. Not wanting to frighten her or the other children more than they were, he kept his distance, smiled reassuringly, and promised he wouldn't hurt them or even touch them. They didn't look as if they believed him. Richard turned toward the door often. He was uncomfortable and wished Kaylin would come out. At last she did, her face an intense mask of calmness, a spring wound too tight. Richard stood and the children ran back into the building. The old man stayed where he was. She took Richard's arm, walking him away. "There are no horses here," she said, watching fixedly ahead as she walked back the way they had come. "I think it best if we stay off the roads, stay to the less-traveled trails."
"Kaylin, what's going on?"
He looked back over his shoulder.
"What happened here?"
She glared at the bloody message on the wall as they went past. "Death to all who resist the Westland."
"Missionaries came, telling the people of the glory of Darkin Rahl. They came often, telling the town council of the things they would have when Dahara rules all the lands, telling everyone of Rahl's love for all the people."
"That's crazy," Richard whispered harshly.
"Nonetheless, the people of Horner's Mill were won over. They all agreed to declare the town a territory of Dahara. The People's Peace Army marched in, treating everyone with the utmost respect, buying goods from the merchants, spending silver and gold with abandon." She pointed back at the rows of lumber under tarps. "The missionaries were as good as their word. Orders came down for lumber, a lot of lumber, to build new towns where people would live in prosperity under the glowing rule of Father Rahl."
Richard shook his head in wonderment.
"Then what?"
"Word spread. There was more work here than the town people could handle. Work for Father Rahl. More people came in to work the orders for lumber. While all this was going on, the missionaries told the people of the threat to them from Westland, the threat to Father Rahl from Westland."
"From Westland?"
Richard was incredulous. She nodded.
"Then the People's Peace Army moved out, saying they were needed to fight the Westland forces to protect the other towns that had sworn allegiance to Dahara. The people begged for some to stay for protection. In return for their loyalty and devotion, a small detachment was left behind."
Richard ushered her back onto the trail ahead of him as he gave one last puzzled glance over his shoulder.
"So it wasn't Rahl's army that did this?"
The trail was wide enough, so she waited until he was next to her before she went on.
"No. They said everything was fine for a while. Then, about a week ago, at sunrise, a military unit of the Westland Army swept in, killing the Dahara detachment to a man. After that, they went on a rampage, killing people indiscriminately and sacking the town. As the Westland soldiers killed, they yelled that this was what happens to anyone following Rahl, to anyone who resists Westland. Before the sun set, they were gone."
Richard grabbed a fistful of shirt at her shoulder, jerking her to face him.
"That's not true. Westlanders wouldn't do this. It wasn't them. It couldn't be."
She blinked at him.
"Richard, I did not say it was true. I am merely telling you what I was told, what those people back there believe."
He released his grip of her shirt, his face having a second reason for its flush. He couldn't help himself from adding,
"No Westland army did this."
He started to turn back to the trail, but she took his arm, halting him.
"That is not the end of it."
By her eyes, he knew he didn't want to hear the end of it. He nodded for her to go on.
"Those left alive began leaving at once, taking what they could carry. More left the next day, some after burying members of their families. That night, a detachment of Westlanders came back, maybe 50 men. There were only a handful of townspeople left by that time. The people were told that resistors to Westland are not allowed to be buried, that they are to be left for animals to pick clean as a reminder to all of what will happen to any who resist the rule of Westland. To make their point, they collected all the men still left, even the boys, and executed them. By Kalin's inflection of the word executed and making no mention of the manner, he knew he didn't want to know. The little boy and the old man back there were somehow overlooked, or they would have been killed too. The women were made to watch. She paused. How many women were left? She shook her head. I don't know. Not many. She peered back up the trail, staring off toward the town a moment before her intensely angry eyes returned to his. The soldiers raped the women and the girls. Her eyes burned into his. Each one of those girls you saw back there was raped by at least... Westlanders did not do this! She studied his face. I know. But who? Why? Her expression cooled back to calm. He stared back at her in frustration. Isn't there anything we can do for them? Our job is not to protect a few people or the dead. It is to protect the living by stopping Dark and Rahl. We do not have the time to give. We must get to Tamarang. Whatever trouble is about, we had best stay off the roads. You're right, he admitted reluctantly. But I don't like it. Nor do I. Her features softened. Richard, I think they will be safe. Whatever army it was that did this is not likely to return for a couple of women and children. They will be off to hunt bigger game. Some solace that was, that the killers would be off to hunt larger groups of people to hurt in the name of his homeland. Richard thought about how he hated all this, and remembered how, when he was back in Heartland, his biggest trouble was his brother always telling him what to do. A group of soldiers that big isn't going to be traveling by trail through a thick wood such as this. They'll stay to the roads. But I think it best if we start looking for wayward pines at night. No telling who could be watching. She nodded her agreement. Richard, many people of my homeland have joined with Rahl and done unspeakable crimes. Does that make you think less of me? He frowned. Of course not. And I would think no less of you were it Westland soldiers. It is no crime upon you to have your countrymen do things you abhor. We are at war. We are trying to do as our ancestors have done in the past, seekers and confessors alike. Dethrone a ruler. In this, there are only two we can count on. You and me. She studied him with an intense, timeless expression. He realized he was gripping the hilt of his sword tightly. A time may come when it is only you. We all do as we must. It was not Kalin who had spoken. It was the mother confessor. It was a hard, uncomfortable moment before she released his eyes, turning at last and starting off. He pulled his cloak tight, chilled from without and within. It was not Westlanders, he muttered under his breath, following behind her.
Late for me, Rachel said.
The little pile of sticks with rocks all around burst into flame, lighting the inside of the wayward pine with a bright red glow. She put the fire stick back in her pocket and with a shiver warmed her hands at the fire as she looked down at Sarah lying in her lap.
We'll be safe here tonight, she told her doll.
Sarah didn't answer. She hadn't talked since the night they ran away from the castle, so Rachel just pretended the doll was talking, telling her she loved her. She gave Sarah's silent words an answering hug. She pulled some berries from her pocket, eating them one at a time, warming her hands in between each one. Sarah didn't want any berries. Rachel nibbled on the piece of hard cheese. All the other food she had brought from the castle was gone, except the loaf of bread, of course. But she couldn't eat that. The box was hidden inside it. Rachel missed Giller something fierce, but she had to do as he had said. She had to keep running away, finding a new wayward pine every night. She didn't know how far she was from the castle. She just kept going while it was day, the sun at her back in the morning and in her face at evening. She had learned that from Brophy. He called it traveling by the sun. She guessed that was what she was doing, traveling. A pine bough moved by itself, making her start. She saw a big hand holding it back, then the shiny blade of a long sword. She stared, her eyes wide. She couldn't move. A man stuck his head in. "What have we here?" He smiled. Rachel heard a whine and realized it was coming from her own throat. Still, she couldn't move. A woman pushed her head in beside the man's. She pulled the man back behind her. Rachel clutched Sarah to her chest.
"Put the sword away," the woman scolded. "You're scaring her."
Rachel pulled the partly unbundled loaf of bread close to her hip. She wanted to run, but her legs didn't work. The woman pushed into the wayward pine, came close, and knelt down, sitting back on her heels, the man right behind her. Rachel's eyes looked up at her face. Then she saw the woman's long hair, lit by the firelight. Her eyes went even wider, and another cry came from her throat. At last, her legs worked, at least a little. They scooted her backward against the trunk of the tree, pulling the bread with her. Women with long hair were always trouble. She bit down on Sarah's foot, panting, a whine coming with each breath. She squeezed Sarah with all her strength. She tore her eyes from the woman's hair. She darted glances to the sides, looking for a place to run.
"I'm not going to hurt you," the woman said.
Her voice sounded nice, but Princess Violet said the same thing sometimes just before she slapped her. The woman reached out and touched Rachel's arm. She jumped with a cry, pulling back.
"Please,"
she said, her eyes filling with tears.
"Don't burn Sarah up."
"Who's Sarah?" the man asked. The woman turned and made him hush. She turned back, her long hair falling from her shoulder. Rachel's eyes fixed on it.
"I won't burn Sarah," she said in a nice voice.
Rachel knew that when a woman with long hair talked in a nice voice, it meant she was probably lying. Still, her voice did sound like it was really nice.
"Please,"
she whined,
"can't you just leave us be?"
"Us?" The woman glanced around. She looked back, right to Sarah.
"Oh, I see. So this is Sarah."
Rachel nodded, biting down harder on Sarah's foot. She knew she would get a hard slap if she didn't answer a woman with long hair.
"She's a very nice-looking doll."
She smiled. Rachel wished she wouldn't smile. When women with long hair smiled, it usually meant there was going to be trouble. The man stuck his head around the woman.
"My name's Richard. What's yours?" She liked his eyes.
"Rachel?"
"Rachel? That's a pretty name. But I have to tell you, Rachel, you have the ugliest hair I've ever seen."
"Richard!" the woman squawked. "How could you say such a thing?"
"Well, it's true. Who cut it all crooked like that, Rachel? Some old witch?"
Rachel giggled.
"Richard!" the woman squawked again. "You're going to frighten her."
"Oh, nonsense. Rachel, I have a little scissors here in my pack, and I'm pretty good at cutting hair. Would you like me to fix your hair for you? At least I could make it straight. If you leave it like that, you might scare a dragon or something."
Rachel giggled again. "Yes, please. I would like to have my hair straight."
"All right, then. Come over here and sit on my lap and we'll fix it right up." Rachel got up and walked around the woman, watching her hands, keeping far away, at least as far away as she could inside the wayward pine. Richard picked her up with a big hand on each side of her waist and set her on his lap. He pulled some strands of hair out.
"Let's have a look at what we have here."
Rachel kept an eye toward the woman, fearing a slap. He looked over, too. He pointed with the scissors.
"This is Kaylin. She scared me at first, too. She's awfully ugly, isn't she?"
"Richard, where did you learn to speak to children like this?" He smiled.
"Picked it up from a boundary warden, I know."
Rachel giggled at him. She couldn't help it.
"I don't think she's ugly. I think she's the prettiest lady I ever saw."
That was the truth, but Kaylin's long hair scared her something fierce.
"Well, thank you, Rachel. And you are very pretty, too. Are you hungry?"
Rachel wasn't ever supposed to tell anyone with long hair, any lord or lady, that she was hungry. Princess Violet said it was improper and punished her one time for telling someone she was hungry when she was asked. She looked up at Richard's face. He smiled, but still she was too afraid to tell Kaylin she was hungry. Kaylin patted her arm.
I bet you are. We caught some fish, and if you let us share your fire, we would share some fish with you. What do you say?
She smiled real pretty. Rachel looked up at Richard again. He gave her a wink, then sighed.
I'm afraid I caught more than we can eat. If you don't help us, we'll just have to throw some out.
All right, then. If you're just going to throw them out, I'll help you eat them.
Kaylin started taking off her pack.
Where are your parents?
Rachel told the truth because she couldn't think of anything else to say.
Dead?
Richard's hands stopped working, then started again. Kaylin got a look like she was sad, but Rachel didn't know if it was real or not. She gave her a squeeze on her arm with a soft hand.
I'm sorry, Rachel.
Rachel didn't feel too sad. She didn't remember her parents, only the place she lived with the other children. Richard snipped at her hair while Kaylin took out a pan and started to fry the fish. Richard was right. There were a lot of fish. Kaylin put some kind of spices on them while they cooked, as Rachel had seen cooks doing. It smelled so good, and her stomach was making noises. Little pieces of hair were falling down around her. She smiled to herself at how mad Princess Violet would be if she knew Rachel's hair was cut straight. Richard snipped off one of the longer curls and tied a thin little vine around one end of it. He put it in her hand. She frowned up at him. You're supposed to keep that. Then someday, if you like a boy, you can give him a lock of your hair, and he can keep it in his pocket, right next to his heart. He winked at her. To remember you by. Rachel giggled.
You're the silliest man I ever saw.
He laughed. Kaylin smiled while she looked over at him. Rachel stuffed the lock of hair in her pocket.
Are you a lord?
Sorry, Rachel. I'm just a woods guide.
His face got a little sad then. She was glad he wasn't a lord. He turned and dug a little mirror out of his pack and handed it to her.
Have a look. Tell me what you think.
She held it up, trying to see herself in the mirror. It was the littlest mirror she ever saw, and it took a minute to get it in the right place so she could see herself in the firelight. When she did, her eyes went wide, and she got tears. She threw her arms around Richard.
Oh, thank you, Richard, thank you. It's the prettiest my hair has ever been.
He gave her back a hug that felt as good as any Giller had ever given her. One of his big, warm hands rubbed her back. It was a long hug, too, the longest she had ever got, and she wished it would never end. But it did. Kaylin shook her head to herself.
You are a very rare person, Richard Cipher, she whispered to him.
Kaylin stuck a big piece of fish on a stick for her and told her to blow on it until it was cool enough not to burn her mouth. Rachel blew a little, but she was too hungry to blow for long. It was the bestest fish she ever had. It was as good as the piece of meat the cooks had given her that one time.
Ready for another piece? Kaylin asked.
Rachel nodded. Then she pulled a knife from her belt.
Should we all have a slice of your bread with the fish?
She started to reach for it. Rachel dove for the loaf of bread, snatching it away just before Kaylin got her hand on it. Rachel hugged it to her with both arms.
No!
She pushed with her heels, scooting back, away from Kaylin. Richard stopped eating. Kaylin frowned. Rachel reached one hand into her pocket, her fingers clutching the fire stick Giller had given her.
Rachel? What's the matter?
Kaylin asked. Giller had told her not to trust anyone. She had to think of something. What would Giller say?
It's for my grandmother.
She could feel a tear run down her cheek.
Well then, Richard said. Since it's for your grandmother, we won't touch it. Promise. Isn't that right, Kaylin?
Of course. I'm sorry, Rachel. We didn't know. I promise, too. Forgive me?
Rachel took her hand back out of her pocket and nodded. The lump in her throat was too big to talk past.
Rachel, Richard asked, where is your grandmother?
Rachel froze stiff. She didn't really have a grandmother.
She tried to think of the name of a place she had heard of. She thought about places she had heard the Queen's advisor's name. She said the first one that came into her head.
Horner's Mill.
Before the words were finished coming out of her mouth, she knew it was a mistake. Richard and Kaelin both got scared looks on their faces and turned to look at each other. It was real quiet for a minute. Rachel didn't know what was going to happen. She looked to the sides of the wayward pine, the spaces between the branches. "Rachel, we won't touch your grandmother's bread," Richard said in a soft voice. "We promise."
"Come, have another piece of fish," Kaelin said. "You can leave the loaf of bread over there. We won't bother it."
Rachel still didn't move. She thought about running away fast as she could, but she knew they could run faster and would catch her. She had to do as Giller told her, hide with the box until winter, or all those people would get their heads chopped off. Richard picked up Sarah and put her on his lap. He pretended to give her a piece of fish.
"Sarah's going to eat all the fish. If you want any, you better get over here and have your share. Come on, you can sit on my lap and eat. All right?"
Rachel searched their faces, trying to decide if they were telling the truth. Women with long hair could lie easily. She looked at Richard. He didn't look like he was lying. She got up and ran over to him. He pulled her into his lap, then put Sarah on her lap. Rachel snuggled up against him while they all ate fish. She didn't look at Kaelin. Sometimes, when you look at a lady with long hair, it was improper, Princess Violet said. She didn't want to do anything that would get her a slap, or anything to get taken off Richard's lap. It was warm in his lap and made her feel safe.
"Rachel," Richard said, "I'm sorry, but we can't let you go to Horner's Mill. There's no one left in Horner's Mill. It's not safe there."
"That's all right. I'll go somewhere else then."
"I'm afraid it's not safe anywhere, Rachel," Kaelin said. "We will take you with us, so you will be safe."
"Where?"
Kaelin smiled. "We are going to Tamarang to see the Queen." Rachel stopped chewing. She couldn't breathe. "We will take you with us. I'm sure the Queen will be able to find someone to take care of you, if I ask."
"Kaelin, are you sure about this?"
Richard whispered. "What about the wizard?" Kaelin nodded and spoke softly to him.
"We will see to her before I skin Giller."
Rachel forced herself to swallow so she could breathe.
She knew it. She knew she shouldn't trust a woman with long hair.
She almost cried. She was just starting to like Kaelin. Richard was so nice. Why would he be nice to Kaelin? Why would he even be with a woman mean enough to hurt Giller? It must be like when she was nice to Princess Violet, so she wouldn't get hurt. He must be afraid of getting hurt, too. She felt sorry for Richard. She wished he could run away from Kaelin like she was running away from Princess Violet. Maybe she should tell Richard about the box, and he could run away from Kaelin with her.
No, Giller said not to trust anyone.
He might be too afraid of Kaelin and tell her. She had to be brave for Giller. For all the other people, she had to get away.
"We can deal with it in the morning," Kaelin said.
"We better get some sleep so we can be off at first light."
Richard nodded as he hugged her. "I'll take the first watch. You get some sleep." He picked her up and handed her to Kaelin. Rachel bit her tongue to keep from screaming. Kaelin hugged her tight. Rachel looked down at her knife. Even the princess didn't have a knife. She put her arms out to Richard with a whine. Richard smiled and put Sarah in her hands. That wasn't what she wanted, but she hugged Sarah tight and bit down on her foot to keep from crying. Richard mussed her hair.
"See you in the morning, little one."
And then he was gone, and she was alone with Kaelin. She squeezed her eyes shut tight. She had to be brave. She couldn't cry. But then she did. Kaelin held her tight. Rachel shook. Fingers stroked her hair. Kaelin rocked her while Rachel eyed a dark gap in the boughs on the other side of the wayward pine. Kaelin's chest was making funny little movements, and Rachel realized with wonder that she was crying too. Kaelin put her cheek against the top of her head. She almost started to believe. But then she remembered what Princess Violet said sometimes, that it hurt more to punish than to be punished. Her eyes went wide at what Kaelin must be planning that would make her cry. Even Princess Violet never cried when she dealt out a punishment. Rachel cried harder and shook. Kaelin took her hands away and wiped the tears from her cheeks. Rachel's legs were too wobbly to run.
"Are you cold?"
Kaelin whispered. Her voice sounded like there were still tears in it. Rachel was afraid that no matter what she said, she would get a slap. She gave a nod, ready for what might happen. Instead, Kaelin took a blanket out of her pack and wrapped it around the both of them. She guessed so it would be harder to get away.
"Come, lie close and I will tell you a story. We will keep each other warm, all right?"
Rachel lay on her side, her back against Kaelin, who curled all around her and put her arm over her.